Session number 9956.
Michael Owen, Reel 9. Was there any other sort of investigative procedure when they were offering you this? Did they give you any sort of test for your ability or adaptability?
No, they didn't. Possibly, on hindsight, I think they were wrong, because here again, as I mentioned earlier, I had no clue on mathematics. And, of course, navigation is damned important. And that is what Combined Operation Police Patrol, which is what it was called, that is what they were doing. They were guiding craft, landing craft, into the invasion beach. They were doing an assessment as to availability, or what should I say, sand conditions, rocks and so forth. So they were doing a reconnaissance of the beaches before the actual invasion, and on the invasion they were guiding the assault ships into the correct spot. So they were very important. I think in hindsight, yes, if they looked up my record, they would have probably found that I was no good at mathematics or possibly navigation.
So you think that you really got it on the strength of this recommendation from this chap who was already involved in it?
Yes.
Who'd seen your work at Salerno?
That's right. Yes, yes, most certainly.
So after this interview, where you...
Well, I accepted the fact that I would do this. Now, the reason for it was that this Sir Patrick Hastings' son, Nick Hastings, had gone into North Africa in a large submarine, but he suffered from claustrophobia. And he did not like midget submarines, and I was to replace him. Well, I found him as the training officer at Hailing Island, where I was taken to do my training. That's to say, in foil boating, canoeing, and we used to have to swim in the Nude in January down there. It was damn cold, you know. And there was a certain jealousy, I think, on his part towards me, because I'd taken his position. So I don't think we hit it off terribly well together. However, I also was to take part with, I think it was COP 5, and replacing him, I was on my own. So I had to train up quickly. Now, one of the interesting things that happened, I remember I got a hell of a bollocking of ticking off for, was an exercise which was held from Hailing Island. We had to go to Chichester, which is a long way, by foil boat. There were a number of us. And one group was to do a reconnaissance of our own airfield. And our object was to capture the post office at Chichester. So Irwin here decided that he'd got time on hand, and it wasn't on the official, procedure for the exercise, but I decided to capture the Lord Mayor. And I remember going up with one of my, with the Marine who was with me, because there were two in the foil boat, and we went up to this, it was early February, and we went up to this lovely house in Chichester, and he was obviously a conservative, I would imagine, very wealthy man. The maid came out. She was dressed as a maid, and I said, "Is the Lord Mayor there?" "Yes." And the Lord Mayor came out, and I said, "Now, will you consider yourself a prisoner, sir? Oh, do come in and have a sherry, my boy," you see, which I did do. And I then went down to the post office, which was a mile or two away, climbed into the post office. I don't remember whether my Marine was with me or not, but I was pushed into a small room and in the post office. And then, unfortunately, one of our chaps sent a smoke bomb down from the chimney way above, from the top of the post office, nearly asphyxiated me. The head of the Home Guard was the Lloyds Bank manager. So he said, "Come on, my boy, you go and have a drink in my flat." So I had a drink with him, and we rendezvoused with the rest of the party and back to base. The following day, 2 or 3 days later, I was called in by this man Hastings and told that I was a bloody fool and I'd caused riot in Chichester. What had happened was the Lord Mayor's wife was playing bridge with her friends and said the Home Guard were no bloody good because her husband had been captured. I don't forget, that wasn't on the schedule. And, of course, the Lloyds Bank manager was extremely annoyed to be referred to as no bloody good, and it was all my fault. So I wrote to the Lord Mayor and apologised, got a nice letter back, but I was detained in barracks for a week or something like that. This is over-enthusiasm, is what I put it.
What were these canoes that you were using, what were they like?
They were the same as you. Well, two men, canoe, canvas. There weren't these canoes that you see these days where you capsize. I don't think I ever capsized. They were very strong canoes, and you've seen them in probably pictures on the raid on Bordeaux. Very strong canoes.
Did you take to canoeing, the technique?
I enjoyed that. I enjoyed it very much, yes.
What about the swimming in January or whatever?
Oh, that was toughening up. They then said to me, Hastings said, right, you go down to Portsmouth and go into an X-craft to see whether I suffer from claustrophobia. So that's when I first met George Honor, who was a very fine commanding officer, RNVR. And I went down in this submarine, and it was perfectly all right. I accepted it. And I had to go through the tank, Dolphin, which was, you know, the submariners have to go through. They gave me about half an hour instruction, which I didn't like that. I didn't know enough. You put the Davis escape apparatus on, and then you got up. You were pushed down below in the bottom end of the tank, and you had to escape as indeed you would in a submarine. I didn't enjoy that. I don't think I had enough instruction on it.
But, did you manage it all right?
Oh, yes, I managed it. And then back to this Hailing Island.
You say you didn't have any trouble the first time you went down in an X-craft.
No, I didn't suffer from claustrophobia. That's what they were looking for.
It didn't worry you at all?
No.
How long were you... When did you arrive at Hailey Island?
I would suggest I arrived in November, December, 1943, and I would think, and I know the date, because I was appointed to... I was asked to move up to go out in a large submarine in an exercise from the Holy Loch in Scotland, you know, to do an exercise from a large submarine, HMS Clyde. The boat was called Clyde, commanded by Commander Ingram, and then to go to the midget submarine base at HMS Varbel 2, which is at Loch Striven. It's at the base, a very, very secret place at the time. It was desolate. So I remember it would have been in February... middle of February, I went out to HMS 4th, I think it was, the submarine depot ship, went out for 2 days exercise with the regular. I was attached to the regular.
That was in the Clyde?
In the Clyde, yes. We did an exercise.
What did that exercise consist of?
It consisted of going out. I, in fact, didn't myself, because these people were doing the exercise. I was doing the drawing from the silhouettes of the coast. You had to do that, and these people did the exercise and going out in their foal boats and then going ashore. I, in fact, didn't do that because my operation was to be from a midget submarine, and it wasn't required for me to do that. But we came back to HMS 4th, and the date was February the 28th, 1944, and what, in fact, happened was that Arden Adam Pier, which was a pier... at the base, there was a telephone exchange, and there was a wren. At the seaward end, there was a small hut. Now, they had never caught... Dunoon was being flooded with cigarettes from the people, sailors, in the ship, the base ship, 4th. And the reason why they nobody had been caught was because at the base of the pier was this wren in telephone. And if she saw the customs... she would ring through to the office of the watch and say, rabbits, so that anybody who had any cigarettes or ratings, you know, as well, don't forget, or gin or whiskey, then officers perhaps, which I don't think many did that, but if they had, they'd go away and they'd go ashore with nothing, so that no rabbits, and so the customs hadn't caught anybody. Now then, as far as I was concerned, on the night of Saturday, February the 27th, I went into the officer's mess, and I took 100 cigarettes, or was it 200, which I put in my special swimming boots with my swimming equipment. And I then went down below, and I got 1,000 cigarettes from the NAFI manager. And I said to him, I suppose it's all right to go ashore tomorrow, which was, I think it was a Sunday, the 28th of February, 44. Well, it must have been, because the customs, the Wren wasn't at the base. I proceeded ashore, that was on the Saturday night, I proceeded ashore the following morning, and don't forget that Loch Striven was a very desolate spot, and I believe that there wasn't any cigarettes there, you had to pay full prices, whereas at Blyth in Northumberland, HMS Elphin was a shore base, and you had duty-free. This is part of my plea eventually. However, I arrived, and out came, there was no Wren at the base, and my 100-weight vehicle from Loch Striven was there to receive me. Out came one officer, any cigarettes to declare? I said, you only allowed 200. I said, 400. He said, fair enough. Out came a second officer who had gold round it. The first had a peak cap. The second had gold. Anything to declare? Well, I have 700. Out came a third man from this little Nissen hut, and he wore a trilby hat. He was the boss. Anything to declare? And I realized I'd had it. So I declared 1,000. He said, you go back to the ship. He didn't know I was on special service. So I said 1,000. And note was taken. They didn't find the 200 in the boots of my swimming equipment, but that was by the way. So off I went to Loch Striven to do my mid-submarine training. And we'll come back to this. To the disciplinary court later, shall we?
Right. Now, this Loch Striven, this is where you were getting properly trained
yes.
in the midget submarines.
Yes. There was HMS Varbel 2, was the name of it. There was Varbel 1 at Rothsay with the Bonaventure. I think that was it. I never went on board her. She was the base ship. She was a ship, actually. The Varbel was the shore base at Rothsay, and Varbel 2 was a big mansion. A desolate spot in Loch Striven, where they had a small quay. They had these boom defence wires, you know, going across, where the midget submarines, as you now know, they trained for cutting the wires for the Tirpitz job and other jobs. And they also had a mock-up of an escape chamber, and they had what were called XTX craft training. They were exactly the same as the X craft. So we were trained. There were three or four men in these submarines, and we were trained to run it. And
how did you run it? What was the role of each man within the crew?
Well, you had an ERA, an engine room artificer. You had a diver. You had a commanding officer, and then you had another officer who would run the pumps.
So there were
four. Three or four in this. And then you had what was known as the wet and dry. You had where the the batteries were. Then you had the wet and dry, which was the lavatory and the escape chamber. Then you had the control room, and then you had the engine room. So we were trained to run these things, and we were made to escape. And on that score, I had an annoying experience, and that was they put you down in 40 feet in a C.B. Gorman suit, which is a diver's suit, which is a very, very heavy suit, and they put you on a rope. And there was a warrant officer. He was a right bastard, this one I had. He was a tough nut. But you had protosorb granules on your chest, a small container. And this took away oxygen, preventing oxygen poisoning. And if you were in trouble when you were down 30 or 40 feet, you gave four tugs and came back up. You see, they pulled you up. Well, I was down one day. I told you I'd lost some teeth when I was mined earlier on. And if any of these granules come into your mouth, it's like iodine. and also it can be very hurtful. Well, what happened was on this particular occasion, I was down and I could feel that something was wrong. My mouth was hurting, and I gave four tugs and I was pulled up, and this man said to me, "Get down again," as if I was a coward, and I had to go down. Therefore, it subsequently transpired that they hadn't refilled the platysorb container for some time. I discovered afterwards that it should have been fresh platysorb. Well, if you can imagine my feelings when we had to escape from the submarine at 40 feet. Having had that experience, you have no protection. You have to flood up from the wet and dry. Flood up and then equalize. That's to equalize the air pressure with inside the escape hatch, and then get out. So that was very frightening. Now, we did that. There was Titch Fraser, who got a VC. He sank a Japanese cruiser, Takoa. There was West McCott, who sank the floating dock in Bergen Harbour. He cut the Hong Kong cable, a telegraph cable, in Japanese. And then there was a man called Carey, who, in fact, was a diver, and he lost his life, I think, through oxygen poisoning. Well, without any doubt, with oxygen poisoning. He was a diver, and he was lost off the Barrier Reef a year later. Anyway...
Was that all that was being trained with you at the time?
Yes, these were the four of us who were being trained at the time. No, there could have been one other. I don't know. There could have been one other, but this was a sort of a team. All I can say is that on the day, and I don't want to bore you on this, but all I can say is on the day that we did this escape, they had to equalize and show no bubbles. Because, of course, if they were going under an enemy ship, there shouldn't be any bubbles, you see. As far as I was concerned, any reconnaissance that I had to do was done at night time. So it didn't matter if there were any bubbles, because nobody would see them. So they went out first, and there was one man left in the craft to bring it up, of course. There was five. They went out first, and I decided that I wanted to get out quick, so I got the water up probably beyond my head, and instead of equalizing, I opened the hatch. And, of course, what I didn't know, that there was about four captains up there, because this was a great occasion. It happened once a month, or maybe once every 2 months. Come and watch these chaps getting out of this thing, you see. And there was a terrific sort of bubbles came right up, and there was absolute panic station, for which Irwin was again given a bollocking. But I explained I couldn't care bloody less about it because of the fact my reconnaissance was done at night. It didn't worry me that. So the other event, which I do, there were two things there, which I remember, was we went to Dunoon, my friend, who lives in, funny enough, in Gosforth here. I reckon he saved my life. I'm sure he did. Because we had a hell of a night out at Dunoon. And all I can say is that the following morning, I had the most ghastly head. Corrie Ford, my friend, who was the instructor, junior to me, he was a sub-lieutenant, I said, the commanding officer said, "Right, Irwin, you're in charge. You're to go out. And Corrie, you're, as usual, instructor, but Irwin gives the orders." So I said to Corrie, "For God's sake, let's go out and have a cup of cha. Let's get down quick," which we used to, 180 feet, have a cup of tea, say, cha. So I gave the orders, open up vents and so forth, and flood Q tank, which was the gravity tank. And we went down like a stone, and suddenly the water poured in. I was at the sort of driving wheel, and the water poured in. Well, I would have had absolutely no clue how to stop the water if it wasn't for my friend. Now, there was a thing called the air induction pipe, which was the snorkel. And I should have said, shut the air induction pipe, but I'd forgotten this. He had a head too, my dear, and I think his reaction wasn't all that quick. The water wasn't terribly high. In fact, it was very low, but it was a very frightening thing to find water pouring in beside you. You'd made a mistake. And, he shut the snorkel off eventually, and we then came right up again. I mean, that was part of the game. There was a casualty, not when I was there. I think it was before. Every week, could have been every month but or week, but there was a trawler came up to supply the base, this old house. And on this occasion, it must have been a chance in a million, because this submarine, this X-craft, XT, surfaced. And the trawler was... And there were very, very few trawlers came by, and it surfaced just underneath. He blew everything, the propeller smashed it, and there were casualties. So that was the sort of my experience. So I went back.
What sort of manoeuvres were you being taught to do with the submarine, besides...
To be trained, if necessary, if anything went wrong, to take anybody's position within the X-craft. That was the main object of my being up there,
You had to know the basic workings of the engine.
Yes, in case anything happened, somebody went ill or something like that. That's right. And I passed.
And what manoeuvres were you training to do with the X-craft?
Well, none of this cutting of nets or anything like that, because that was not within my sphere. It was purely and simply for me to understand how an X-craft worked. And I'll say this, that the commanding officer was Commander Brown. I was passed as having done the thing, as being...
How many were training you?
Oh, there would only be two or three people, officers training.
What was the security like on the base?
Very tough, very good, indeed. I think they must have had guards around. It was extremely good. It was a desolate spot, and there was only one road getting in. So it was extremely good.
How long were you there?
I would have been there from February and March, April. I would suggest for about 2.5 months, something like that, and passed out.
How much time would you spend underwater in the submarines of that? I mean, not an hour. Was it regular, a daily affair?
Oh, it was a surface dive. I wouldn't know. So long ago, I wouldn't know. But of course, also, you would in your CB Gorman suit, and as I say, you would dive in the open as well, in the open sea, in the open lock. But they did very well, as you know, later. They did an extremely good job.
What did you think of the submarine? Did you think it was a reliable piece of equipment?
Oh, yes. You can see one at Dolphin, Gosport. It's cut in half. You can see one there. Oh, yes, it was brilliant. Varley and Bell, they were the two commanders that invented the thing. And then I went back to Hayling Island, where, I am sorry to say... the Admiral was called James in Portsmouth. Hastings and I had fallen out, and Hastings had said that when the cop went up to the submarine for the initial, the HMS Clyde, he had said that everybody had been warned that if they took cigarettes or smuggled, they'd be kicked out. Now, I, on that day, happened to be down in Portsmouth when he gave that warning. So he lied when he told Admiral James that I had been warned, and he insisted that I should have a disciplinary court. He didn't want me in this to take his place. This is the long and the short of it. But that's maybe sour grapes. However, it was decided that I should have a disciplinary court, and up to HMS Wolf, I think it was, in, May, I would think, early May, yes, maybe it's end of April, I haven't the date. And there was a disciplinary court, and the captain was Ben Bryant, a very fine, he became an admiral, and was a very fine submariner in the Mediterranean. Now, I had a prisoner's friend, that was a paymaster, and it so happened, I'd said to this paymaster, and I wasn't bribing Commander Bryant, I wouldn't do that. Well, yes, I'd get as much defense as possible. But what happened, I said to him, my father commanded an anti-aircraft regiment in Malta. My father, incidentally, was back then, and he wanted me to employ a lawyer. I said, no, I'll fight my own battle. And then I told him Ben Bryant was there, and he said, well, let him know that you knew me, because Ben Bryant had known my father in Malta. Anyway, I don't think it had any effect on it, but there was the disciplinary court. And I pleaded guilty, made a statement in mitigation of the sentence, and said, please do not dismiss me my ship, because I have an important job to do. The sword pointed in my direction. I was annoyed with all these midshipmen around looking at me, but still, the sword pointed, and I lost 6 months' seniority. Now, the interesting thing was, Ben Bryan said, look, come down to the wardroom, Irwin, and have a drink. Could I take the customs with me? And I took the two customs officers down with Ben Bryan, wonderful man, and they said to me they were terribly sorry that, in fact, that I, being on special service, had been caught. But I said, were you tipped off? They said, yes. There was a rating in the canteen. And on that Saturday night, he'd gone ashore. He obviously hated officers. He'd gone ashore, and he'd warned the customs that I had was coming ashore. I don't know. But as a result of that, they'd done the reconnaissance of the beaches, and there was no further requirement for my services on that, on any reconnaissance. And I then asked, could I go back to the flotilla? That is the landing craft assault flotilla.
When had they done the reconnaissance then?
They did their reconnaissance. There was a man called Clouxton Wilmot, Commander Clouxton Wilmot, who was the most brilliant commander. And he had done it in Rhodes. He'd done it in the Mediterranean. And he and engineer, sappers, had done the reconnaissance on the actual invasion beaches, I think in January.
So why were you being trained to do it? I'm
sorry. I was being trained to do that in the event of having to do it in May, I suppose. But also...
But the original reconnaissance was adequate.
Was adequate, and they weren't going to risk any more. Also, what did annoy me on this was that having had this, what disciplinary court, there was a young man called Robin Harbord, and I think he was a very nice chap indeed. He had taken my place in the submarine for the guiding of the on the actual assault. He had taken my place because I had been up for this court-martial.
Trained as well?
No, he hadn't, and I was extremely hurt that he should be, never having been in X-craft, should have taken my place. He went in and he banged the side of the submarine when the landing craft came in, you know, on the D-Day thing. But I was more fortunate because I had a flotilla, as I'll tell you shortly.
Now, this bit about leading them in, how exactly did the submarine lead them in? Did it surface
The submarines, as you know, D-Day was put back. It was put back for 24 hours because of the weather, you remember that. Well, these X-craft, there were two of them, they were off the beaches, I think probably 3 days before the invasion, and they were banging, there was somebody on the bow banging the submarine so that the noise would be heard landing craft personnel who were navigating, because they had this echo sounding or ASDIC machine they'd hear, so they knew exactly where to go, and it'd also be a torch the submarine would be in the exact position because they'd been there 2 or 3 days before, you see, and conditions must have been terrible in those midget submarines for that time.
They'd be submerged, would they?
They'd be submerged, and they would periscope during daylight to find their exact position, and then they would surface at daylight, you see, when for the actual assault. And that was the guide. Honor did a marvellous job, George Honor. I knew him very well, of course.
So you were a bit embittered.
I was, because I'd been trained for the bloody thing, and I was very annoyed with this man, Hastings. I came back, and I think I was about a week as to, they had to decide what to do with me, and Commander Brown had passed me. Commander Golding, who was at Hailing Island, was very, very much annoyed about it all. So...